There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to The Parenthood. One of the most exciting things about teaching antenatal classes in 2018 is that you realise that families grow in a huge variety of different ways. Gone are the days when you had to be married. Over the last 6 years, Chiara and I have seen women welcoming their babies into the world in all sorts of different circumstances. So today I am here with Chiara. Welcome, Chiara. And we've also got Mel Johnson. She's a life coach and the creator of the Stalk and I blog. Age 30, having split up from her fiancé, Mel thought she had plenty of time to meet the man of her dreams and start the family she so wanted. But age 36, after a million dates, she realised that instead of waiting for Mr. Right to walk into her life, if she wanted children, it might be worth taking matters into her own hands. So she ended up using a sperm donor, and in February 2017, Daisy was born. Mel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, no worries. Thank you for having me.
I can't tell you how happy that we're sitting here. That you know you did this, that this is an option, because a generation ago, this just wasn't an option for single women who had that like time, ticking time clock. But also the fact that we're talking about it, the fact that you've created a platform in which people can seek advice and not feel alone. And I think that is so important. So thank you
No worries. Really happy to be able to talk about it.
So going back to the beginning, what made you sort of realize, was there a sort of catalyst that made you sort of suddenly sit down? Do you remember that moment where you thought, right, now I'm going to have to look into something else?
So I think it was more of an ongoing process, I guess. So I started considering it. Like you say, I was 30 when I was single, and I dated, and I really, you know, I wasn't sitting on my sofa hoping to meet someone. I was really out there dating, but for whatever reason, unfortunately, just never met anybody that was turned into a long-term partnership. So I think you have this age of 35 in your mind where you start thinking, oh, that's the age that everyone talks about where your fertility starts to decline. And so I had this pressure of the age of 35. And so between 30 and 35, as I was dating, I started to think, what's going to happen if I don't meet somebody who I can have a baby with? Because it's just been my dream to become a mum. And I thought, I really don't want to have that dream taken away from me. So I did start to look at, you know, has anyone else been in this situation? Is there anything else that I could do?
Did you straight away look at sperm donors, or did you think about freezing your eggs or going down that sort of route?
So I looked at everything. I thought, I looked at adoption, I looked at sperm donors, I looked at freezing my eggs. I thought, do I know anybody who might want to do it from a partnership which is non-romantic? So I thought about all of these things, but just kept on being drawn to doing something on my own with a sperm donor.
Did you talk about it to your family and friends right from the beginning, and what were their reactions?
The way I did it is I'm very close to my mum, so and I knew my mum really wanted to be a grandmum and really wanted me to, you know, to be a mum, because she knew how much it meant to me. So I talked to my mum about it for, you know, all the way through, saying, oh, what's going to happen if I don't meet somebody, and explained that I was looking into this, and she was super supportive from the beginning, which makes it so much easier when you know that your family are behind you. with my friends, over time, I talked to more and more people the more I'd been thinking about it. And everybody was supportive. Some people needed a bit of time to think about it. And then they came back to me and said, yeah, I get it. I think it's a good idea. I haven't actually had anyone personally that I know in my life who was against the idea, because they knew I'd really given it my all to try to meet somebody. And, you know, it was just one of those things that I wasn't. So I think they thought this is the right option for you because of that.
And the idea of forming a non-romantic partnership with someone who could be the genetic father is an interesting idea that I'm sure lots of people think about. Did you explore that at all?
So I thought about it, but the more I sort of looked into it and thought about it, the more complexities start arising around how will you actually do it? Would you start spending Christmases together? What involvement would they have? And I think you could go into something with the best intentions, but would that, you know, would it be too complex? And also finding someone who wants to do that. So I just felt that it probably would bring up too much complexity.
Counselling, you have to have counselling mandatory, don't you, if you're going to use, and how helpful was that?
I think the mandatory counselling is more just to check that you are suitable to be, you know, you're in the right headspace to be able to do this. And I was really clear. I'd given it a lot of thought and consideration. So personally for me, it was, you know, I didn't get much more from that. But I think for someone who perhaps is still more in the thinking stage, maybe that would be more useful.
So how is that accessed? Presumably the counselling that goes with official sperm, getting an official sperm donor, is once you've already started down that track. But it might be useful for people to talk before they get to that point.
Yeah, and that is exactly what I'm trying to provide to people, because that is where there is a gap. So once you've already made the decision to do this, there is more support for people. But it's that step before where you're thinking about it, where personally for me, I just felt like I was the only person in the world in this situation. I just thought, I look at my friends around me, they're all meeting people. If they wanted to have children, they were on that journey. And I did feel very alone that I'm the only person. Subsequently, now I realise that's absolutely not the case. And so it's about how do we get these people together so they feel they have some more support.
And it's interesting that you say that you started thinking at 30, because, of course, you know, as a doctor, you know, that's what I tell people, you know, your fertility does start to decline and it's different for everyone. But retrospectively, having done this and being where you are now, would you have told yourself to do it earlier?
I think I wanted to give myself a really good opportunity to meet somebody and go down a more traditional route, if you like. So I really was, you know, trying to do that. I think possibly what I would have done earlier is the first stage where you go to get tested to see if there is anything specific wrong with problems with your fertility, because then you have a much clearer idea what you're working with, if that makes sense. When I had my tests, they said, actually, you're looking really good for your age.
And how old were you then?
36.
Yeah.
And how accurate are those tests, Kiara?
They're not 100% accurate, and you can ever think and look completely normal and you can still struggle to get pregnant. Yeah. But obviously it's reassuring if all those tests come back saying everything's looking good for your age. But of course it is still for your age. And
yes, because I've been speaking to women who have had the tests earlier and something has come up which is definitely going to put a challenge in. So they're starting the journey earlier. And so it is good that they have started looking into that at 30, because if they'd have waited till later, they wouldn't have known that they were facing additional challenges because something specific.
And those challenges that you're talking about are the sort of medical procedures to get pregnant, whether you have to go down the full IVF route or whether you can do it in a slightly simpler way.
Yeah.
I think it'd be a good idea just to talk vaguely about cost, just to kind of give people an idea, because I mean, I'm sure it's not a cheap process. What are the sort of vague costs involved?
It really depends, because there's different types of treatment and there's different places you can go. So if you are going to one of the top clinics in London and having IVF, you are with a donor, you're looking at possibly about 12 grand. So significant costs.
Yeah, that's a lot.
In different places in the UK, it's not quite as much. And you can also have the IUI treatment, which is significantly less. It's really hard to give a cost because they are quite different.
So just to explain the difference between that, for people might not know. So the IVF is where they're stimulating your eggs, they're taking the eggs out of your body, fertilising it in the laboratory and putting the fertilised embryo, once it's grown for a little bit, back in. Whereas IUI is where they're preparing your body for pregnancy and then inserting the sperm at the right time to hopefully fertilise inside your body.
And I actually had a third one to add complexity called, is it ICSI, which is where they do even a little bit more than the IVF.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
exactly.
So all of those come with different prices, and more people are also looking at going to clinics abroad because it's more affordable for them to do.
Well, and at the other end of the spectrum, you can buy sperm on the internet.
Exactly.
And that doesn't cost anything, but of course that carries quite a lot of risk with it. Do you know much about that?
What I do know is I work quite closely with Manchester Fertility Clinic, which is where I went, because they approached me after the treatment about helping them out with the solo mum audience to try to help get more of a community together. And so I've had significant conversations with them, and they were explaining about the donors. And what I know is that at the clinics, they go through a significant process of all of the background checks of medical history, whether they're in the right place themselves. They understand that they could get contacted later on. So out of every 100 people who come in to donate, I can't remember the exact number, but it was really low, the amount of that actually are able to, when all those checks have happened. So you feel in very safe hands when you're using the clinics.
I think obviously, they often do genetic tests as well,
exactly,
don't they?
Exactly. Whereas obviously if you're doing a more casual, just getting it from somebody, none of that has been done. So you're open to any sorts of risks. And also there's a very strict legal arrangement in place with the sperm donor. So when my daughter is 18, she will be able to access his contact details and contact him. He's very aware of that and has signed up to being contacted. Whereas if it's done outside of that process, there's no legal arrangement. You don't know.
And do you ever meet him?
Yes, so both of us could meet him, and I felt that was really important for my daughter to have the opportunity, so she knows growing up that she will be able to meet him.
Could you meet him before she's 18?
No, we don't get the contact details. I think that the only way is if we could contact him if there was like a medical problem through the official channels, but just to meet them, no.
And what do you know about him?
So how it worked, I think it's different everywhere, but at Manchester Fertility, where I had my treatment, how it works is you fill out a questionnaire with physical characteristics about what you're looking for in a donor. There are some other things like religion, education, but personally for me, I feel like that's more nurture and how you bring somebody up as opposed to, you know, genetics. So you choose physical characteristics and then they...
And how detailed are those?
It's like eye colour, hair colour, weight, size, height, you know, just the
basics.
The basics, yeah. And then they provide you with two donors. Now, some people have been horrified when they're two donors, because you see stories of people having a catalogue of 50 to choose from. I feel like that the way Manchester Fertility do it is actually really good from a stress point of view, because I chose the physical characteristics. These two donors met those physical characteristics, and they've both written two letters. So one letter is to me to explain why they've donated, and the other letter is to the baby to say why they've donated, which is obviously just slightly different reasons. And I read both of the letters. They were both absolutely lovely, and I thought both of these, I could choose either of them, so just picked the one that I liked the best.
Are you given a name or not?
No.
Yeah,
no.
So retains their anonymity. Yeah.
And do you know whether there is a limit to the amount of sperm a man can donate?
There is, and that's the other sort of benefit of doing it officially. So My understanding is that they can donate to 10 families, so not 10 children because you may have multiple births, but 10 families. So my daughter Daisy may have 10 or a few more half siblings, and then they stop it at 10 because there's too much of a chance that then if they're in the local area they might start meeting.
Yeah.
And in terms of cost, just to bring it back to that, I mean, you obviously mentioned £12,000 at the top of the scale.
Yeah.
But if you were just to buy a sort of vial of sperm,
yeah,
from a reputable,
yeah,
source,
yeah,
and thought, I mean, could you just like get a turkey baster and do it yourself, or would you need to go into the hospital? If you did it that way, what would the cost be? I mean, what is the cost of sperm?
So again, my understanding is I think it's about £1,000. You absolutely can do it that way. I want to be honest, I definitely researched that option as well. You can buy everything you need to, you can test your ovulation at the right time, you can do it, and that is still like a legitimate way because it's still, you know, within the guidelines of the rules.
And the sperm is coming from
exactly
a source that has been tested.
Exactly. And then I think IUI, which is the one where they prepare it and put it into you, I think that's about £1,500. So a massive variety, a massive cost for people.
And how did you find the process of... That, you did IUI in the end, or
I decided to go straight to IVF because to complicate my life, I lived in Budapest at the time and I was using Manchester Fertility Clinic, I had to fly back every time I wanted the treatment, and I thought, I've been thinking about this for a long time, I've saved specifically for this, I've got enough money to try IVF, and from an emotional point of view the percentage of success is so much higher personally for me. I just decided to go straight to that. So many women, this is the biggest decision of, shall I try IUI first because it's so significantly cheaper and lots of people it's happened for first or second time, or shall I go straight to IVF because the percentage likelihood is higher.
And I guess your age and the fertility test,
exactly,
you've had will help you,
exactly,
make that decision.
So the younger you are and if you have no known fertility issues, then IUI is more desirable.
Yeah.
Sure.
And how did you find the process of going through IVF from a physical, medical perspective?
I have to say it was harder than I thought it would be. It's,
yeah,
it's like I've heard a lot of women talk about, and just recently I think women have been in the press saying about the IVF process. It's tough on your body, it's tough emotionally, and it's tough doing it on your own. You know, you have to take injections, and I remember I was in my kitchen, my hands shaking, taking the first injection.
So these are injections that they give you before you actually have the IVF,
exactly,
to prepare your body,
exactly,
to produce lots of eggs,
yeah,
to harvest.
And I didn't realise how long the process would,
yes,
be because all of that preparation time and preparing yourself.
So how long was it for you?
Gosh, that's a good question. I think it was about 3 weeks,
yeah,
altogether. And then my I overstimulated from the treatment, so I couldn't carry on with the embryo transfer. I had to freeze the embryos and then have the embryo transfer the following month.
Okay.
So that extended it again. So yes, it's tough doing it on your own, but luckily I've got a very good support network who helped me.
And how did that work with work? I mean, obviously it was really complicated for you because,
yeah,
you were in a hardcore job, you were living in Budapest. Did you talk to your employer? Did you tell them what you were doing? And
I didn't. The clinic were really great at trying to minimise the amount of time I needed to be away. So my employer are really flexible. They are an example of someone who is really flexible. And I said I needed a medical procedure and I needed to be in the UK. I didn't actually have much time off work. I was in the UK and I was working from the UK during that time. The clinic let me get some of the procedures from the doctor in Budapest because it's just standard things, so they minimized the amount of time I actually needed to be there. And although it is a really tough process, you don't actually need to be off work. Some people choose to. Personally for me, I needed the distraction, so I just sort of carried on. For I had some time off, but for most of the time not, and my employer were really flexible.
Yeah, I think that's most of my patients say that they're able to work through it. It's just you have to be in,
yeah,
the clinic,
yeah,
quite a few times,
yeah,
and...
yeah.
And so did you get pregnant first time round?
I didn't. I had the first embryo transfer and I took a pregnancy test and it was negative. And it took me longer than I thought to get past that. I had a really good feeling that I was going to get pregnant first time and I didn't. And I waited a year actually before I tried again. And then
but you had embryos frozen,
yes.
So it was going to be easier second time
around. Exactly. So after the IVF, I was very lucky. I had three frozen embryos. The first one was unsuccessful, and the second one is my daughter Daisy.
Yeah, fantastic.
So the just having a frozen embryo transfer is the easiest procedure I've ever experienced. It almost doesn't seem real. Yeah. You walk out of the clinic and think, has anything happened? Because it's just such a quick process. So it's very lucky if you're in that position.
Yeah.
And how was the pregnancy for you? Because obviously, you know, the majority of people experience this as a couple.
Yeah.
You were obviously on your own with yeah. a sort of added element of that you'd use the sperm donor, which in a way, I suppose, makes it a bit less complicated than, you know, as opposed to if you'd got pregnant with someone you knew and then you weren't together and
yeah.
they weren't sure about that, what their feelings were. Yeah. How did you find the pregnancy?
It was, I don't make life easy for myself. So I lived in Budapest. I moved back from Budapest to Manchester. I changed jobs and was working in London. So was commuting on a weekly basis from London to Manchester. I bought a house which needed renovating. So I was renovating an entire house. And for the first 3 months was suffering really with bad sickness. So I think I had so much on that actually it helped me. So I was just so focused on getting everything ready. I had really good support. My friends and family were amazing. They really were a help. And once I got over the first 3 months and I was living back in the UK and the sickness had gone, actually I quite enjoyed pregnancy and I was really excited. And there were some nerves about how I was going to do things on my own, but in general it was good.
What about antenatal classes? Did you do those?
I did. And funnily enough, out of everything throughout this whole thing, antenatal classes were one of the things that I was most anxious about. Isn't that weird? I can't even explain why.
Because you're going to be thrown together with a group of women who were pregnant,
yeah.
inverted commas, normally.
Yes. And I just thought, how is it going to feel? What are they going to think of me? You know, is it going to be embarrassing?
And were you upfront immediately?
Yes. So what I did is I phoned the person
teacher.
Who was the teacher and said, I'm feeling anxious about it. I'm on my own. I'm going to bring my mum if that is okay. And she said, absolutely no problem, don't worry, we'll make you feel both at home. And so I instantly felt better and I am so glad I did them. I speak to a lot of women on their own who don't do them, probably for similar reasons, and I have made the best friends. We're all in the same situation. Yes, they have got partners helping them, but so many of the things are the same. So I'm so pleased I did do it.
And then during the birth itself,
yeah.
You know, there's always the birth partner. It's very
yeah.
often the father.
Yeah.
Who supported you during your birth?
It was my mum. And it was very funny because I said, right, mum, I'm going to interview for you for this position. Are you up for it? And because she said it was, you know, she immediately said she'd help me. But in our relationship, I'm usually the one who's sort of in charge. And I said, I need you to be on the ball and taking charge. And she said, no, I will. So she passed the interview and she was amazing. She helped me out no end. I'm very close to her anyway, so she was the perfect person.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
So what was the birth like? Did you have a straightforward birth after the relatively complicated getting there?
No, I did not. The birth was, as I've heard many women say, exactly the opposite to what was planned. So I had done daisy birthing classes, actually, and had wanted to go down a water birth route and hypnobirthing. And Daisy was just loving it inside me too much. So she was 2 weeks overdue, which meant I had to be induced, which meant that then I couldn't have a water birth. And 3 days I was in hospital being induced and nothing was happening. And then I was started to go into labour for about 8 hours, of which the last two started to be significantly painful. And a consultant came through and said, this is probably not going to happen naturally. How would you feel about a cesarean? Yeah. So I had a cesarean.
And so she arrived safely, thank you.
She arrived safely. One of the reasons that I was not wanting to have a cesarean was because on my own it just makes looking after the baby later harder. But luckily we'd already discussed that possibility and my mum was going to move in with me for the first 2 weeks just to help out.
You do need more help, definitely.
Yeah, and they were brilliant and it went well, and she arrived safely, which is a good thing.
And how are you finding life as a single mum?
I'm loving it. I think it's even better than I thought it would be. I'm really loving being a mum. I think that I feel like I've waited so long that when finally the moment comes, I was just, overwhelmed with love. There are challenges, so I don't want to sit here and say it's all amazing. It's tough. It's tough doing it on your own.
Daisy's how old now?
She's seven months now. Yeah. And I think I was breastfeeding, which means that same as many women with partners, the nights I did all of them until she started sleeping through, which wasn't until 6 months. So the tiredness is the biggest issue.
And the loneliness. But, I mean, it's lonely being a mother even if you have a partner.
Yes.
Because you're suddenly stuck.
Exactly. And I think what I was explaining to people is it's the evening, so you put the baby to bed and then you go downstairs and then you're on your own. And so even though I've got the same situation as lots of mums where you're on your own in the day, then being on your own at night as well, that is the toughest part. So it can be lonely.
So how have you coped with that? What have you done? Any tips for people who might be in the same boat?
I've got loads of tips. So one thing is sort of reverse your day. I do all my socialising in the day. My days are packed full of socialising, so that in the evening I feel almost relieved to have some time to myself. Yeah. I invite people around to my house, so we do some socialising at my house so that we can carry on chatting. And I've also used, I don't know if you've heard of Mush I've used that app and have met some people through that.
So Mush is an app that introduces mothers and parents, isn't it?
Yeah.
They call it Tinder for mums.
Exactly.
And in a non-sexual way.
And I'm an expert at online dating, so I loved it much. I have met some new friends who are mums, and some people also on their own, which is great. So got a good support network around.
And what about when the baby was really little? Did you just try and get people round in the evenings to keep you company?
I did. My mum was the main supporter, but friends really made an effort. Again, it wasn't easy for me because I'd moved house, so it's quite a drive for some of my old friends to come and visit. So it was tough. But I really did try to utilise the evenings for other stuff. So, I mean, we'll talk about it, but I was starting the stalk and I, and actually that was the perfect opportunity to do some of the work for that in the evening. So I focused on that, which gave me something good to focus on, actually.
And dating again?
I am. I went on my first date, actually, when Daisy was about 16 weeks, I think. Just honestly to get out there and see what it was like. And I think it feels really different now. A whole pressure has just been taken off me. And now I'm just meeting a guy and seeing if we get on and seeing where it goes from there. So it feels so much better than it did with all that pressure on me before.
And are you always really upfront about the fact you had a child and used a sperm donor?
Really upfront. So at the moment, the only real way for me to meet people is online dating, because I'm not sort of socialising in areas where I would meet someone in real life, really. And on my profile, it's the first thing you say, because, you know, you want to check that people are happy with that. And, you know, I'm sure some people aren't and they won't get in touch, but all the people that get in touch are totally cool with it. And a lot of people have said to me, actually, this is perfect, because, you know, there's no one else involved, there's no pressure for them. It actually, for quite a lot of guys, it's a pretty good situation.
Yeah. I mean, I've definitely encountered and supported lots of women who the biggest problem in their life is not the fact that they're a single mum, it's the fact that they're dealing with the father of their child and the complexities and the difference. You know, they want different things, and then legally the father has lots of power in terms of where
when
you live
not together, you
when they're not together. And I mean, I think, you know, you mentioned that, you say that it's very straightforward, that there's no one involved, and actually I think that is a huge sort of pro. I mean, I was talking to a group of girls who'd done the bump class, and there was one single mum, and after their babies were born they all got together, and it got to the stage where they're all so pissed off with their husbands.
Yeah.
And she's like, I just don't have this. And they were like, oh, a bit jealous.
Yeah, I got my NCT friends in trouble when I was talking about it before, because they'd said the same thing to me. I think that is the massive benefit. If, you know, it would be the worst scenario to just get with somebody because you want to have a baby and they're the wrong person for you and all sorts of complications would happen. It's so much easier doing it this way, and it is definitely the biggest benefit, because you get to choose everything yourself. No one else is disrupting the routine and you don't feel let down. I think the worst thing for some mums is what they've told me is their expectations are too high. And they said, you know, it's us. We not always them, but their expectations of what their partner will do is higher than the reality, and therefore they feel frustrated, whereas I know that it's me and there's no one to let me down or to, you know, it's all on me. So,
and in terms of the feelings around parenting, I mean, it's Daisy's such a precious baby. He's obviously taken so much emotion and money and everything to get to where you are now.
Yeah.
Everyone has days where parenting is rubbish,
yeah,
and the baby's screaming and you're thinking, oh goodness, why have I done this?
Yeah.
Realistically, have you ever
been
there?
And I think I feel like I feel extra guilt when I feel like that because of everything I've gone through. I think, how can I now be thinking, oh, this is a terrible day?
I hear that from patients who've gone through IVF,
and,
you know, so often, and it's no easier for them when their baby cries than it is for someone who's got pregnant easily,
and
but you feel much more guilty.
Yeah, that's what you have to tell yourself. And also, I think because I've got these friends from my antenatal class, you know, everybody just shares what they're going through and it's all the same. So that makes you feel a bit better as well.
Well, I think sometimes if you've wanted a baby for a really long time and you've struggled to get there, you keep on saying, the world will be perfect if I get pregnant. And then you realise that it has a whole new set of challenges that you hadn't anticipated. And that's why the guilt is more.
Yeah.
But just understanding that every person experiences that.
Exactly.
And also, you know, if you've been through hell to get there, and often you're slightly older, of course it's going to be harder because you're juggling more balls. And
And when you're on your own, you know, it's you haven't got anyone else helping out with any of the other things, you know, the practical things.
Yeah.
So it can be tiring. I think having a good support network in place is critical. People say to me, can you do it without a support network? And I think, yes, you can. You know, I've seen women do it virtually completely alone, but it will just be much, much harder.
And of course, it's not ideal for the baby either. You want the baby to have a big support network.
That's true.
And actually, one of the biggest questions with sperm donors is, or single parents in general, is the importance of a male role model in that child's life, or another person in that child's life at least who they can learn from.
Yeah,
is that something you've given much thought to?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's really key for me. I want to make sure that Daisy has some really good male role models. I'm very lucky that I have lived around the world and I've got friends from all over, really good male friends I know will be a great influence in her life. I'm very close to my brother, my dad, my uncle, so I've got lots of male family members and lots of male friends who can teach her things, you know, different perspectives, different things for me, and that's really important for me that she spends a lot of time with them.
And did you ever consider, or have you considered choosing sort of one person, like a brother or a best friend or an uncle, who you have that conversation with them and say, I'd love you to sort of take on the mantle of that male role model?
Interestingly, I've not chosen one person. I've almost sort of split it down into different things. So just a random example, swimming isn't my thing. I'm just not a great swimmer. And I've got a friend who loves swimming. So I said to him, I'd love for you to really help Daisy with swimming because I know I'm not going to be able to. So I'm almost doing it more on a piecemeal basis rather than just choosing one person to play.
Lucky
that
Daisy,
role.
She can have loads of loads of support.
And presumably people are really honoured to be asked to be involved. I mean, I think I see lots of girls feeling quite guilty about getting people involved, but actually, like, I was speaking to someone the other day who was kind of really needing a birth partner. I was like, God, if someone asked me to be their birth partner, that would be the biggest accolade.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, I suppose not being afraid to ask for help.
I think that is a massive problem for people in my situation, because if you are planning to become a solo mum, the likelihood is you're probably quite independent to be thinking about doing it. And asking for help out of a lot of the women I've spoken to doesn't come easily. Certainly for me, it doesn't. I feel like I need to be super mum and do it all myself. And again, the additional thing, I've chosen to do this on my own, so I need to be able to do it on my own. It's that additional guilt coming back. So learning to ask for help is something that really is important. And I 100% agree with you. I've lit up people's faces when I've said, I'd love for you to help me with this. And they want to help, and they want to know how to help, because people don't know the best way to help. And so I feel like I've had to learn to say, do you know what would be really helpful if you could do this or you could do that? And really explaining to people the best way they can help me. And people have loved it.
And have you found it difficult letting go of some areas to allow people to help?
I think it's back to more the feeling like I need to be able to do it all. But honestly, I in the end, I've had to, because you just can't do it all.
And
then everyone is happy, it works, and you think, okay, this was the best decision. So it's getting easier for sure.
Obviously, going forward, you're a single mum. Daisy's a single child, an only child. Would you consider having another baby?
Yes, it's such a hard decision. I would love to have another baby. So it is something I'm thinking about. I do just need to think about, you know, will I be able to manage? I have got a network of people that I'm in contact with, many who have gone on to have second children on their own. So there are people out there who've done it that I've spoken to and got advice from. At the moment, I think I need to, I'm waiting and still thinking, but definitely something I would consider.
And if you did, would you use the same donor?
I would. The way it works is you have access to that same sperm donor, so that your child, they'll be full siblings,
yeah.
Which is really nice for them as well.
Or presumably in your case, you have an embryo left, don't you?
Exactly, yes, so, yeah. Yes, and that's you've got an embryo left, so it makes it even more.
And that's a whole other conversation. It's when you have an embryo frozen, ready to go, not using it.
Yes.
There's an ethical dilemma there.
Exactly. So it really is a big decision about, it just practically can I do it?
Yeah. One of the things you talked about in the early stages is the fact that there was sort of no community. You know, you took this decision and you obviously found a great fertility clinic, but there was no antenatal class specifically for it. There was no online community which you could ask for advice and just feel like you aren't the only person in the world doing it. Obviously, you've created The Stork and I, which is a blog website to give other women going through what you did exactly what you didn't have.
Yeah.
Tell us about the blog and what it achieves and how you support women going through the same thing.
So basically, when I was going through it, I would have loved to know somebody who'd gone through it and just had a chat with them to talk through, these are my concerns, and just talk through it with them. And I didn't know anyone. And then the second thing was, when I was in the waiting room of the fertility clinic, I could look around and see lots of women on their own, thinking, oh, I wonder if they're doing it on their own, but not wanting to disturb people when they're in the waiting room. And when I asked the clinic, for data privacy reasons, they can't tell you who else there is and what they're doing. So I thought to myself, do you know, I'm going to start something myself to connect these women, to give them that support. So I created the Stork and I. I am a life coach, so I thought rather than the generic life coaching that I'd been doing, I was going to specialise in life coaching for women who are trying to make this decision. So I've subsequently met so many women. The biggest thing really is helping them to make the final decision. People talk to me about how do I know no? So how do I make that really final, okay, I'm going to do this decision? So that's the one thing. And then the other thing is just creating a community. So we've got a Facebook page, a Facebook group, which is closed just for women who are in this situation. And we've got women from around the world who join and say, oh, I found this community. I didn't know it was out there. This is brilliant. And asking all the questions, supporting each other through it. Such a positive thing and something that I would have loved as I was going through it, which is why I set it up.
Fantastic. So you offer, I've had a look at the website. There's some great articles on there, really lovely, charting the whole journey you had through the decision making, but also then the process of being pregnant, having Daisy, and then afterwards, which I love. But you also specifically offer one-on-one counselling for people who want, you know, some specific advice about their situation.
Exactly. And so once people have looked on the blog and seen the articles and chatted to each other, if then they think that they would benefit from then talking it all through with someone, that's what I can offer then, chatting it through. It is more coaching. I can offer some mentoring advice because I've been through it, but it is more trying to help them work through what their barriers are and how they can come to their own decision. And then some women want to maintain that discussion throughout, and there's different things that come up. Who should my birth partner be? How do I tell work? How do I tell my friends? How do I react if people aren't supportive? Different things come up, and I've helped people with different stages.
Have there been many situations where you've advise people not to go ahead with it?
So I wouldn't give advice to say yes or no. But I don't think it's dangerous advice to give. So I help them come to their own decision. My role is to ask the right questions to make sure they've considered everything, so to feel like they're coming to the right decision for them. I would not like to give people advice on whether to do it or not, because it's their decision at the end.
And what about talking to Daisy about the whole process? Because obviously the majority of the children that she ends up at school will have mummies and daddies, and presumably it's important to have this conversation sort of early on. How are you going to do that?
So I have got a book. There's a company called the Donor Conception Network, and they've created a book called My Family. And that helps you to explain to different age groups, actually, how the babies were created in all different scenarios, actually, single mums, but also two mums, two dads, all the different and heterosexual couples who've used a donor. So I have got the My Family book, but what I'm doing is actually creating my own book based on the learnings that I took from that, and filling it with who is Daisy's family. So explaining where she came from, but also, you know, the family is the friends that we've brought into our life who we love because they're awesome people, and her granddad and grandma, and you know, so just explaining it in pictures. And as she gets older, you can just add more and more detail in, explaining a little bit more as she starts to understand.
And if she says, "Who's my daddy?" Would you call the sperm donor her father, or just a donor?
I'm still working through it at the moment, actually, but what I'm looking to do is say that to create a baby, you have an egg from a lady and you have a sperm from a man. And if you have a couple, then those two go together and a baby grows. If you haven't got the man and the lady, then you need to get a gift from, in my case, a man who gives the sperm. And so the I'm explaining it to her at the moment that it was given to us as a gift from a man who in the future she will be able to meet.
Yeah. And presumably the idea is that she doesn't ever remember the sort of revelation that she's, you know, that it's
this
all...
This is just the norm that she's always growing up with, and you just need to give her enough information so that when people at school ask what the situation is, she's got an answer she's really comfortable with.
And presumably you'll tell the school too, and they'll be aware so that they can kind of keep an eye out.
I think this is a good question actually, because a lot of people I speak to, they're very anxious about how they tell people, and my advice of what I've said to people is get two lines in your head that you can really comfortable with saying, and then say that to everybody. So I said, especially when I was pregnant, people are like, oh, congratulations, you're pregnant. And I'd say, yep, I'm doing it on my own, because I was worried that if I didn't, I'd lose out on the opportunity because I'm 40 next year or whenever it was. And I was very comfortable saying that, and I told everyone, and everyone was like, oh, okay, great. You know, no negative reactions at all. Whereas if you're nervous and it becomes awkward to tell people. So, get your two lines and be comfortable.
Because, of course, with a sperm donor, it is quite different from an egg donor, because often egg donors is a couple.
Yeah.
You know, there still is a mummy and daddy. There might also be an egg donor,
yes,
or there may also be heterosexual couples who've used sperm donors, but there's still a mummy and a daddy.
And they may decide to treat it differently.
And that's different. Exactly.
Yeah,
it may or may not be different.
Whereas I need to have a story for Daisy, because otherwise, you know, there's a gap. I'm really comfortable with, and I feel very comfortable telling other people, and I'm trying to help women get to that stage of feeling comfortable if that's the situation.
And do you think you'll encourage her, I mean, in 18 years time to try and contact her biological?
I don't think I would encourage her. I'll just be guided by her. So if it's something that she wants to do, I'll absolutely support her. If it's something that's, I think some of it may depend on my personal circumstances as well.
Yes.
I might meet somebody and she might feel like she has a father figure, or it's so I'll leave it totally to her to decide and just support whatever decision she makes.
Yeah.
That's right, to have that open mind, because it's such a long time away.
Yeah, I know, it's hard to imagine.
My opinion changes week by week.
Yeah.
Mel, thank you so much for coming to talk to us. This has been really, really fascinating, and hopefully a really useful resource for people who are maybe in the sort of early stages of considering alternative ways to have a baby. In terms of support online, what have you felt is what are good resources, places, you know, internet sites, websites to take a look at?
So I think people who are looking to do this, the Donor Conception Network is a good place to have a look. And then I would advise people to go to the Stork and I Facebook group, because the amount of information from the people in there is because I've done it my way, I've used one clinic and I've had my experience, but the collection of experience that those other women have got in there, I would definitely advise people to go and have a look at that. And then what I try to do on Instagram, I do more of a day in the life of a solo mum, so try to show this is what it's like, warts and all, and then more of the decision making. The Facebook group will help them with things like that. So.
And you're on Instagram. Where can people find you on Instagram?
It's the Stork and I with underscores between the words. And we'll put the details in.
Yeah, so we'll put all the details. Well, thank you so much
for being so generous and
sharing your story and your experience. As I said, you know, I think it's one of the greatest things of the time in our lives that people are talking about this, because, you know, a generation ago, it just wasn't the case. And people would either be, you know, resigning themselves to not having the family that they so desperately wanted, or sort of secretly trying to sort something out.
And hopefully this way people won't have to miss out.
Yes.
We'll put all the details in our podcast notes, but do check out Mel's blog, The Stork and I. It's brilliant. It's well worth a read, whether you're considering alternative ways to have a baby or even whether you're just curious. I was totally transfixed by your story. It's thestorkandi.com. Thank you also for listening to another podcast of The Parenthood. Don't forget to subscribe, rate and review us if you haven't already. Do look at our Instagram. We're at theparent.hood, where you'll find photos that will make you laugh or potentially give you pause for thought, as well as information about what we're recording next. But in the meantime, from all of us here, thanks for listening and goodbye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.